Sunstone presents It's Just Lines on Paper, My Life as a Mormon Cartoonist, recorded live at the 1986 Sunstone Theological Symposium, held August 20th through the 23rd. We take you to the Salt Lake Sheraton and Towers, where the program is just now beginning.
Calvin Grondahl, who is the author of three Mormon cartoon books. The first book is Freeway to Perfection. His second book, Faith Promoting Rumors, and his last book was Sunday's Foyer. How could I forget? Now, as I was preparing for this and thinking about what I could say about Calvin Grondahl, I went to the mailbox and got my mail, and I noticed that a letter had been misdelivered to my house. It was just sent to the wrong place. And I was going to, you know, put wrong address, but I noticed that the postmark was hell. So I thought, this will be interesting. So I opened up the letter, and this is pertinent to Calvin Grondahl's, to the session today. The letter starts out, "My dear Wormwood," it says, "Once again you have failed. Your task was excruciatingly simple. Drag a simple cartoonist to hell. But you've blundered for the last time. I remember your early reports of Calvin's early childhood. Your encouragement of a young Mormon boy from North Dakota to idle away his time drawing frivolous drawings. You gleefully reported that he would never amount to much. You said he was lazy, shiftless, light-minded, and you were right. But just look at Grondahl and you can see how our enemy has made good on his threat to use the weak things of the earth for his own perverse ends. We do not blame you for the publication of Grondahl's first book of Mormon cartoons, Freeway to Perfection. All hell shared your hope that that book would stir up sweet strains of contentious janglings. Instead, hell was racked with the sounds of healthy laughter emanating from the Wasatch Front. Grondahl held a mirror to the ridiculously absurd creatures and made them laugh at their own self-importance. We had unwittingly played into the enemy's hands. But that wasn't the least of the outrages that we have suffered from the hands of Calvin Grondahl. Our PR department has worked long and hard to create an imposing image of our father below as the dignified author of evil. We enjoy being the object of fear, loathing, and righteous tirades. It shows we are not to be trifled with. There is a certain dignity and respect in that. But the thing that hell cannot bear is being made to look ridiculous. The shame, the indignity, and the ridicule that Grondahl has heaped upon us by portraying the supreme author of evil as a middle-aged, overweight, bisexual, in leather hip boots is unbearable. Your failure to stop Grondahl's second and third books has compromised one of our greatest successes in the Mormon Church, namely the elevation of pathological blandness to a virtue. Grondahl himself recognizes this, and I quote, "In North Dakota, the landscape was flat, but the people were interesting. When I came to Utah, it was just the opposite." I can hear you now. You will say that Grondahl is bland, but beneath that bland exterior seethes a passionate, fertile volcano of imagination. Passion and imagination is the last thing that we need in the Mormon religion at this time. I applaud you for making it impossible for Grondahl to write yet another of his slanderous books while working at the Deseret News. Yet you have made life so miserable for him that he has taken another job elsewhere and has slipped beyond our editorial control. Now that it is almost too late, you recognize the danger. Your suggestion that we deprive Grondahl of a sense of humor by making him a general authority is a good one. But it is also one fraught with danger. We tried that approach years ago with J. Golden Kimball, and it blew up in our faces. No, the only effective antidote to Grondahl's humor is an inflated sense of self-importance. Use the age-old tempter's trick of mixing a little truth with error. Tell them it's wrong to laugh at sacred things, then convince them that they are the sacred things that ought not to be laughed at. If you fail in this, my dear, dear, delectable Wormwood, you may expect no mercy from him who never gives any. Expectantly yours, Screwtape. Calvin Grondahl is the father of three children. He's currently working at the Ogden Standard Examiner and is married to the former Christine Sue Woolley. I give you Calvin Grondahl.
Well, as it usually goes, the projectionist didn't show up, and we don't have any projection facilities to project these cartoons up, and it's sort of like a vision of things that could have been. But I think that since I'm standing up here behind this podium, you know, it kind of reminds me of sacrament meaning. What I was thinking about was maybe us all going to get in a circle and handing cartoons around, but since we're going to do it this way, I think we should always begin with some kind of a quote. You know, usually when you begin to talk, you use some kind of scripture to justify your position. You know, just throw like, you know, my opinion isn't worth much, but if I quote this certain leader or this important, this scripture, that, you know, it adds some sort of, you know, importance to it, you know, and elevates it to some kind of important content that normally, you know, you wouldn't have. So I would think that I'd like at this time probably want to quote Jim McMahon, who in First and Second Cougaronomy once said that whatever degree of outrageousness we attain in this life, it'll rise with us in the resurrection. You know? So you can always find a scripture, you know, to support anything. And you never run out of angles or ideas, you know, to fill books. It just seems like, you know, that every time I did a cartoon, there was always 10 more things coming across in the publication, the church magazines or whatever, that kind of clicked. There was another one, you know, and I couldn't draw them fast enough. And I haven't, you know, I brought some things to show, but it's kind of difficult. So what I want to do is I just probably hang them, you know, fly them out in front of your face, and if you want to see them afterwards, you'll have to come up and take a look, closer look at them. But I'll try to, you know, describe them to you. Like Pat said so elegantly, that I'm from the mission field, and so when I do cartoons, I sort of do it from an outsider's point of view. I kind of look at it from, you know, and having not been born and raised in Utah, you know, that influences the way I look at things. You know, so sometimes, you know, I show cartoons and, you know, to people who are raised in Utah, and they, what, you know, I don't understand this, and I think, to understand Mormon humor, I mean, to appreciate it at least, you have to be able to, it's like an out of the body experience. You know, you have to get back. You have to look at yourself, look at the church, look at what you're doing, you know, and the organization you belong to. And to do that, you know, you'll be able to see things and understand things. And then when you see the cartoon, it clicks, or maybe it doesn't. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to do cartoons or things, you know, whether you're writing or drawing, that other people experience. Now, if I do a cartoon and nobody else, you know, has experienced the same thing, well, where's it going to go? No one's going to get it. So you're trying, always asking yourself, you know, what is going on out there? What is going on in the minds of the members? What are they seeing? So then you put it down on a piece of paper, you know, and then you know by the reaction, you know, where things are. As Pat said, I did three Mormon books. The first one that came out was out. We had the most response in the first one. That's because, you know, you know, always the first thing, the first shock, it always gets the most attention, you know. And this first book came out after Peggy Fletcher, the former publisher for Sunstone. You know, she came to my office one day at the Deseret News, and she said, I was up at the BYU graphics, the BYU film studio, and I saw these cartoons that you'd drawn on Joseph Smith. They're sort of like a comic strip involving Joseph Smith. And it, originally, that's where it all started. And I didn't bring it with me today. I don't know why. I think my wife burned it, but what it was is it showed this Joseph Smith as this cute little Charlie Brown character. And there was this minister who was always trying to get him and get the better of him. And then there was Moroni, who was always floating around like Merlin. And they went through these series of adventures together. And in the end, Joseph Smith was portrayed as, you know, a good, sincere, you know, give-it-all individual. It started out where he would, Moroni appeared in his room and gave his spiel and a little voice comes from the next room and says, it's from his mother, and says, Joseph, how many times have I told you can't sleep with the light on? A blasting light, you know, and he interrupts this thing. And then they proceed to go to the Hill Cumorah, and there they are, there's the Hill Cumorah, and the hill is totally dug out. Thousands of holes everywhere on the Hill Cumorah. And Moroni is saying, well, you know, after 2,000 years, things can change a lot. And finally, he goes on, you know, it really, you think about it, which you're not really, you know, going very far over the edge from where it really was. You know, you think about those early days of the church and how everything sort of evolves and stumbles over, you know. You think of Martin Harris, you think of him, of Joseph, and all the adventures they had together, and it's great. It's great drama. It's good stuff, and you can have such fun with it. And you do it in sort of, the whole comic strip, the feeling I thought was, it was a harmless thing, really. It was, you know, I have a lot of admiration for Joseph Smith, and he's a very colorful, adventurous person. And I think he's the type of person that all of us would love to know, you know, I mean, you look at him nowadays, and there he is, you know, 8 feet high, standing over at the door in some painting or mural, and he's packaged, and he's repackaged by the promotion department, and they redo him all the time, and they repackage him and change this and that. Pretty soon, he's a superstar, and I think that what I've tried to do with the books is take the church and the gospel and bring it down to a level of, I think, the way it was in the early history of the church, where you have a more of a human, you know, involvement, you know, 8 members there on the farmhouse, and well, how do we start? Well, we'll just mortgage the farm, and that's the way we get going. You know, we can't write a check for Bonneville International. You know, I mean, here we are. That's all we got. You know, so he tells his wife, "That's it. We just, you know, here's this angel came down, and he told us to put our, you know, everything on the farm. It's gone. You know, for this project." She doesn't understand, but of course, you know, she's willing to support her husband totally by taking the first translation of the Book of Mormon and giving it away to the neighbors, and here it's all over the place. You know. And he has to go to Joseph Smith and tell him, oh my gosh, you know, I mean, what? And I don't know what happened. I gave it to my wife and it's gone, you know. Fortunately, we have another copy, you know. And you can just see the situation. It's what's so great about it is it's so human. And Joseph Smith just kind of, and it's right there for all of us to see. This is the good times, you know. These are the good things. This is when it worked right. And this is when it went, we made a few mistakes. But they're out there for people to see and learn from. I think I like the best about reading about the life of Joseph Smith is that he puts out his mistakes as well as his triumphs, you know. And I think that's the best. And I think there's sort of an innocence about that. And I think there's sort of a confidence there. And I worked for the church for 12 years. And before that, well, I should go. If you read the little bit of nonsense in the back of the books, you know, I'm like I said, I'm from North Dakota. I went on a mission to New Zealand, and that was great. You know, I mean. During the Vietnam War, that was a great place to be, New Zealand. I'll tell you, all my friends from high school, they went there to Vietnam, and I went to New Zealand, you know. But I came back and went to BYU, and then from BYU, it was interesting. I started working at the Daily Universe there with Del Van Anna, who now works for Jack Anderson, and he's sort of like coming up now as a big columnist. But we had a lot of fun together doing things, and it started out that way. And my whole career sort of started with the fact that this gentleman who ran the Daily Universe there said, he brought me in one day, he said, "Now we want you to do good cartoons, but we don't want you to make fun of the owners of the school, any of the administration, any of the facilities at the school, any of the faculty of the school, or anything that's vaguely connected with the school. But you can do something on the student body itself. We don't, you know, they don't have any strong representation here, so you can do that." So I started doing national cartoons, you know. That's how I got into it, because I was always left. I think one cartoon rings into my mind I did of showing, this one of those rainbird things with a gun sight on it, and it's "Don't walk on the grass or else," you know, and it's aiming at a kid that's coming across and blasting him, you know, and stuff like that. Little things like that. And we did one cartoon that Dale Van Etta actually had the basic, you know, the germ of the idea. Oh, I don't know where it is here, but what it was, now here it is. And this is my first big hit in Mormonism. And it was, it's a redrawing. It's not the original. That was lost in the Great Chicago Fire with the papyrus it's... It's a police officer, BYU security, it says, and here's the guy under a pile of rocks. He says, "And then I said, 'He who is without sin, let him cast the first stone.'" This is a dangerous thing to do at BYU, especially the way they're winning on the ball field. So I started from there, and I was at BYU for a few years, and you know how it is. If you've ever been to school and try to have 3 jobs and no money coming in, and you're struggling, you can't get an art scholarship. I'd bring my stuff in, and they'd laugh. This is art. You know, I mean, you're a village idiot of the artistic community. You know, cartooning, and you know, I'd take a class, and my figure study teacher would say, you know, your work is an incredible example of kitsch, which is cheap imitation. You know, I mean, you draw everything so commercial. And there's just no class to anything you do. And so it was a natural that I should become an editorial cartoonist. And so I got a job. Paul Swenson noticed my work in the universe, and so he sort of raised me up from the lower and levels of obscurity and brought me to the attention of the Deseret News. And, of course, they didn't know what they were getting into at all. But they thought, you know, well, it'd be kind of nice to have this little token cartoonist, you know, put him over there and let him have our name on it, you know. Over the next 12 years, I think they sort of, in some ways, probably lived to regret that. But for the most part, it was well received. It also was well edited too. And just a few months ago, I came to the conclusion that, having worked for the church for 12 years, that I would think that a separation of church and state was about ready in order. So I moved up to Ogden because up there, at least for now, I can do the cartoons the way I want to do it. And boy, have I had a reaction up there. It's the saints up there are really, I don't know, it's sort of like going to Missouri, you know, and as a Mormon and facing the mob. But they really take their newspaper seriously up there, the calls I've gotten. What we started there is something that I tried to do originally with the Church News of the Deseret News. I took on all these, I had a whole stack of these cartoons and a whole bunch of them. I took them in to Dale Van Orden, the editor, and I says, hey, let's do a cartoon strip or a cartoon once a week in the Church News. Well, you can imagine what that was like. You know, it's like Saints Live having their own column in the back, you know. We did. I think Joe Walker, our TV editor, he was naive enough to try it once. Well, let's do this thing. So we had this one idea where there was this, say, President Kimball. Every time he would go, this is when President Kimball was, you know, years ago, he was in full, you know, control of the church and everything. And he would go to the back of the ward meeting house and they'd say, and President Kimball has just come into the back and will be speaking to us momentarily. And everybody would turn and look and there would be just State President or Kimball, you know. What a disappointment, you know, in the faces of the people. It was only a state president, not the President Kimball. It was a mild thing, so we drew it up and put it in the Church News. And boy, I don't know what happened, but the Bombay's doors opened on me, and that was the end of that, you know. And I think Joe Walker was kicked upstairs to TV editor, and that was the end of that. But when I went to Ogden, immediately the first week I was there, you know, they have a Church News up there. It's a small little insignificant thing, you know. But we're doing some interesting things. The Church News, the Deseret News, of color and lavish pages and things like that, all that money, you know, the rich church thing. But we have up there, it's just a little black and white publication, but we have some interesting, it's the Church News is a church news. It's about churches, now, all kinds of churches, not just one, not the church, but churches. Okay. So we have like, Hallelujah, Brother, you know, and we have all this stuff, and we have some great photography up there. And if you open it up, you have some center spreads on, you know, people rolling around, you know, I mean, possessed of whatever or taken away in the spirit of order, depending on what you want to look at it, you know. And I think it's fantastic. I think that it's religion is so interesting. It's such a fun experience. It's such an adventure. And I think that the reason why I'm bringing this up is because that's what it's all about. I mean, religion should be fun. If it isn't fun, then, you know, what is it? I mean, eternity is a long time not to have fun. So what we have in the back is we have the one of the stories was that Hanna-Barbera, you know, did those great animated cartoons in the 60s, you know, Scooby-Doo going across the screen 50 times, you know, and all the same background. Anyway, they're going to work on something called the Animated Bible. So what we have is that, you know, we have this father, he's still got his white shirt on from Sunday, and here's his son, he's got a tie too, you know, one of those wide ties that hang way down, you know, old style, that you're always giving your kids, these hand-me-down ties, you know. But anyway, he's got his VCR there. Everyone should have a VCR. And anyway, he says, Hanna-Barbera presents the Animated Bible in his little arrow, so that's what's printed on the little video cassette there. And it says, a little voice coming out of the tape, it's running. He says, Holy Moses, Batman, look who's coming down the mountain with the Ten Commandments. So you have this little thing, between Batman and Robin meet Moses and stuff. So just a little thing of how would Hanna-Barbera do the Bible? You know, so you'd have that, you know what I mean? There are some other ones, too. If it seems like I'm pushing this the Church News here, I am. I really am. So, but this is one I had some reaction on. You know, I mean, sometimes what offends me my level of you know, where I draw the line between what offends me and what doesn't, you know, is different than most people. At least, I noticed I went to the Kimura pageant, and I mean, I'm not an informed journalist, I don't want to say, but I saw photographs, and we did the church news things, the photographs and stuck them in the church news. This is the Desert News Church News, and all these pictures of the Kimura pageant, and they had these lavish costumes, big headdresses. Well, you know, you're looking at a pageant from about 500 yards away. It's like being up on the top of the Superdome. I mean, you're looking at this game down there, and you can barely make out the players. And so these costumes, just like in the pageants, they have to be outrageous because you can't see them, you know. So, I mean, fair enough, there's good reason. So what I have is this, I have this character coming down on a hill Kimura there, and he says, I've got one question. Did Captain Moroni really dress like a Las Vegas showgirl? And he's got this outrageous, you know, like Ziegfeld Follies costume he's wearing. And here you can imagine this returned missionary dressed like a Ziegfeld girl, and he's, you know. And I get that also from the paintings of the Book of Mormon, where you have these muscle-bound characters, you know, these lavish war bonnets and stuff like that. Just, wow, it's show business. And the thing is, when I do these, I kind of like it. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, you like it, but then again, you can't help thinking, God, it's ridiculous. You know, it's like a guilty pleasure, you know? And so, I mean, I went to the fair, but you know, what happened? We got calls, because people were down there from the Manti pageant, the poor little pageant compared to the, you know, Kimura one. So they had these, you know, kind of subdued costumes compared to that. So they thought I was talking about that, and so, how dare you? In fact, I went and bought some furniture for my house. You know, my poor wife, I dragged her down to buy, you know, new furniture. But the other side was that the person that running the furniture store took the Ogden Standard, and he was a Mormon, you know, and somebody saw that and sold us the furniture. Well, here's your furniture. I hated your cartoon you did on that, by the way. You know, I worked on the pageant, and here's your furniture. And all my wife is saying, well, I don't know who that is. And I'm, that's my husband, but I'm not responsible for, anyway. Actually, we talked, and we parted good company on that, but. Well, I found up there in northern Utah, those people, they take their newspaper seriously, and they take everything seriously. And boy, there's a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of transits up there. And I wonder, I'd probably be, you know, a lot of them are probably journalists. You move, excuse me, moving through town, get move out fast. And like I said, I wish I had a projector and we could project these up on a screen. And here's a. Here's one that we didn't use. Should I show that one?
No.
I brought one that Pat did, and it's very gross. Did we do that? Well, you know, he did want to
explain it.
Why don't you explain it, Pat?
I thought this cartoon was gone. I thought it was destroyed. A few years ago, there was a student who was expelled from BYU who was in student government. They'd gone up to Deer Creek Reservoir. They were ski boating and doing all this stuff, and this one student body official mooned this group of people on shore, and I happened to be a general authority in that group of people. But he was exposed from BYU. That explained it.
I'm not used to this because it's outrageously funny, but because you can see it from back there, it's quite obvious what it is. It's the BYU. You notice, you see him sweat there, you know? That's the purpose of it. You make people sweat like that, you know? I got a whole bunch of those on him. We'll move to the second stringers now. That was quite good. I like that.
You gave me.
Oh, no. The heavy metal. Heavy Mormon. We did a Heavy Mormon series on the Book of Mormon showing a cross between the heroes, like the superheroes, like... But anyway, we didn't bring that one, but that's something we could go into later. But here's one. You know, when the East German temple came out, that was great for me. I love it whenever they build a temple behind enemy lines in communists, because, you know, what happens is that the word comes down, well, we got a temple in the communist countries. Go easy on the Russians now, you know, and pretty soon, every time there's a temple somewhere, go easy on those people. So my situation in the Desert News was becoming that the bigger the church got every year, the smaller I became. You know, I mean, we got a temple in South Africa. Oh, my goodness, you know. Oh, we got a temple. And that's great. I think it's great for the people in the area, but it was very difficult because what happened is you got a situation where that newspaper felt that it was, you know, I mean, that every time it wrote something, the whole world noticed. And so you had to be careful. And anyway, but here's one I did. This is a little vengeance here. I had the East German temple. It's got a red star up on it, by the way. And it says, and it says, better red than no baptism for the dead. So, a little buttons. You can buy them out there afterwards. You should have. But see, that's the way it's going in the church. I mean, you can imagine. We should have a cartoon of poor Ezra Taft Benson. He's dedicated his whole life to anti-communism. And here we are in the end. Good business takes all over all. And I mean, if you're a prophet or apostle or janitor or, you know, sweeping the recreation hall, it's the same thing. We're all in the same boat. I mean, life is just too ridiculous sometimes. Even Jack Crabb says, little big man, he says, life is so ridiculous sometimes even to go on living. But what you do is, if you can just laugh about it and put it in a humorous way, that maybe you can suffer through it. And I think that's what the purpose of it is. And well, there's that heavy Mormon thing. Well, we can come up afterwards and see it. I don't know. But it's great. You know, here's one. I have done some caricatures of the First Presidency as they've come and gone and stuff. And I've never used any of them. Because, people, like you say, you draw them, you like the person, you do them in a cartoon, but it's such a shock. You know, Oliphant does the cartoons of the Pope and his big tall hat and his, you know, and there he is with the shepherd's crook and stuff. And the people are used to that. Well, that's just the cartoonist attacking the Catholics again, you know, so what? But when you do something like that, you know, you wonder whether the shock, and it's like getting into the water real fast, you know, you wonder if you're, you know, going to do it or not. So here's one. It showed, and I don't think this is that good, but it's appropriate now because I can explain it to you. I think you'll probably get it. But it just shows the there's President Hinckley there at the podium, and he's saying, in behalf of the President, I'd like to welcome you to another semi-annual general conference. And here's President Kimball in the back, and there's nobody left. They've all died off, and he's the last one there, you know. You know, here he is, you know. And it was kind of funny to me the way he would live on and on and on so long, and everybody said, well, you know, gosh, you know, I mean, here we are, you know, this is great. I was hoping President Kimball lived to 110, you know. I think it was great, you know. There was a man with a real sense of humor, and when he was, and people that I worked with would tell me stories about him when he was younger and stuff, and all the things he used to do and things, and the crazy thing. I've known some people who are of the Smith family, and there's this Kimball family, the Smith family, and how the Kimballs were always running around doing all kinds of fun things and stuff. But somehow over the years, when you joined the corporation, those things are kind of lost. Have you noticed? You know, and that's what it's a struggle, is keeping that type of thing alive. And once in a while, it comes out. You know, and here's another one involving, here's a couple of assistants with President Kimball, and here's the Sword of Laban stuck in the general in the back end there. This is the MX missile, you know, when the President Kimball came out with this thing against the MX and stuff like that. And there was one we didn't use, fortunately, but there's lots of them. Here's one. Oh, gosh, I don't know. You know, I've just pulled these out. I got stacks of them, and I don't know. I haven't screened any of these, from even myself, but... But, you know, there were some people that were dressed up in white clothing outside the temple in Dallas. You know, they're trying to make fun of the whole thing. And I thought, well, that's pretty outrageous. They shouldn't be doing that. So, you know, but then the thing seems so ridiculous. So I have, you know, he says, this one Mormon saying, no, that's not what we wear in our temples. And here he is wearing a leprechaun suit with white thing. You know, he says, prove it, you know, and his stuff like that. And presentations that the church has. And it's just very difficult because the church is not comfortable, and then they're going at it. They're, you know, so you sit in the middle and you watch these people go at each other, and some funny things can happen. In fact, that's what we're going to be doing up there in Ogden. We're going to do some series of cartoons on the Saints Alive people and the Anti-Mormon group. You know, and we're cooking up some good stuff. And I think we should entertain some questions, but because I've been rambling on enough here, but I'd like to show you just a couple more, if I could find them. But there was one that I got a lot of reaction from lately up in Ogden. I mean, really negative and stuff. And I wish they could. Oh, here it is. Let's just run through these quickly and have some questions. This is a cartoon right here. And when I did this cartoon, I really didn't have anything vicious in mind. You know, what it shows is this rabbi walking down the road, and it's Israel, and he's saying, "Stuart Scat, go home. I should be so lucky. You should stay in your Utah." And it has this little puppy dog following him down the road with Mormon labeled on it. You know, the idea that
you know, the little dog, and, you know, get away, and I don't need a little dog in my life, you know, and here's this dog, and I'm so, you know, I want a home, I want to be loved and stuff. So I did this cartoon. I thought, well, that's kind of like, you know, the way it is in Israel with the Mormons. You know, we go there, we're like a little puppy dog, you know, we just want a home there on the mountainside. But the Jews, you know, are just standing with his bag, you know, his umbrella, get away, I don't want you, you know. Well, we did, and we did that, and the next week, you know, call came in, you know, and the people were, you know, here, I'm trying to draw the cartoon, yes, yes, you know, hold the line, you're on the air, and you know, I said, well, I think you're a very unhappy person, I hate you, you stink, you're very lousy, and I said, well, it was only a little dog, you know, it wasn't like a vulture, it wasn't like the first president of the vulture sitting up there and preying upon the people, bring your tithes and offerings and vultures or something. I mean, that is really outrageous. I mean, that's what the Eastern cartoonists would do to us, you know. And I thought, well, it's just a little dog, you know. And what are you trying to say, Grundle? Are you trying to say Mormons are dogs? And I thought, well, I could draw you a real dog, you know, a dog. You know, I draw the teachers as a big Doberman. You know, here's these legislators down their back, you know, outside the Capitol. You know, and they're waving this doggy biscuit in front of this Doberman. You know, it's the teacher's union on a collar. And I said, well, the doggy biscuit isn't working. I think he wants our wallet, you know. And so, I mean, that's different. You know, here was this little puppy. Well, the first one I did, everyone loved. It's one of those, just right out of the book. And here it is. And I don't even have the caption. It's not even here. But somehow, it was this one that showed this bishop's office, and basically it said something to the fact that here's the bishop, and he's interviewing people, and he says, your wife and your children want to give you a Father's Day present, and I've scheduled them in between 2 and 2:15 this afternoon. So, I mean, everywhere I went, the word, oh, we love that, it was so good, you know, and stuff. And I'll probably do more of these in the future. Here's another one we did. Yesterday's hand cart and the Mormon hand cart of the day, and it's just a golf cart. You know? So the Pioneers yesterday, they drug their hand carts across the plain, and what we do is we drag our golf carts back and forth, talking about how tough we've got it today. And, here's one we did. It just shows honk if you love Jesus, and then there's a big limousine saying honk if you love to make money off Jesus. We keep them really non-denominational. It's probably a lot smarter than the long. Now, here's the original and that other one. With the, anyway. But here's one we did on the Reverend Pat Robinson. He was running for president. So we probably got to mix it up a little bit, you know. We had some calls, too, from Pat Robinson supporters and like this. Like, for the seven, if he was elected president, what would happen? Well, we have the 700 club and the 700 nuclear missiles ready to go, you know. You know, and then we have the government cuts, and then here's the flash across the neck of the abortion clinic, and then we have, you know, the serpent of the house with Tip O'Neill, and then we have Supreme Court crossed out, and then the Supreme Court is heaven instead and stuff. It's a little harmless stuff. For well, before we here's another one. This is interesting. This is an editorial cartoon. This shows you I do editorial cartoon part, you know, I have to do that too. And so this one is, you know, they had the new sodomy ruins came out, so I have a helicopter sodomy control by order of the Supreme Court, and it's on the helicopter waiting to go, and it says, this time don't get the address mixed up. And they're all ready to go, you know how it is with the government. The first one was the cocaine bus that you never, you know, and then it was this. And so one thing after another. I have a few more editorial cartoons, and yeah, I'll take some questions. But one more. This week's cartoon is on genealogy. I've never had really a cartoon on genealogy that I really enjoyed. I mean, I never thought it was really it. And it is up here somewhere. Well, we'll have some questions. We'll back to our program later. Okay. Are there any questions on from the audience? Just no questions. Okay. Well, we'll listen. Yes. I think they just love it. You see, the Ogden Standard Exam philosophy, you know, journalism is, you know, it's like playing football. You're going to get hit. and you're gonna score, and you're gonna lose, and you're gonna get hit and stuff. And so that's their attitude. It's fantastic. When I talked to them going up there, you know, they had to find out where I was coming from and where I told them. What I told them is, you know, I want to work with somebody who is dedicated to good journalism, and, you know, and going out and you know, shaking the tree, you know, making things come out. And I worked with this woman in Florida, and she's 55. She's a member of the church too. You know, she doesn't go all the time, but you know, but she really, you know, she understands that whole area very well, and she's just in love with what she's doing, and she's excited. It's like getting a mission sort of thing. You get with a companion, you're excited what they're doing. What's going on? I can't wait to get out the next day. That's what it's like working up there. Not to say that the paper doesn't have, you know, its challenges and its problems, and, you know, its share of people that would like to see things different. But for me, it's really good, because that's what I have to work with. When I was working in the desert, man, there are some great people there, and it was frustrating because we couldn't always do what we wanted to do. We couldn't get out and you know, do it the way we wanted to. But, you know, that's part of it, you know. You either get used to the system and work, that's the way it is, or you go somewhere else. And, I think after doing those three books, my reaction is very positive. The question was, what was my reaction? I mean, on Mormon humor. I mean, the humor of people, sense of humor in Utah and places. I think there's a lot of it. I think Mormons are, you know, very intelligent and are very, you know, they're individuals. And, you know, they're just like everyone else, and we're really that different. They say we're peculiar people. Well, I don't know. I think we're very much like other people. And I think that when they pigeonhole Mormons and try to, you know, saying, well, Mormons are all like that, you know, I mean, that doesn't work any more than it does anywhere else in the country. I think we have a good sense of humor, and the book shows the fact that reaction is. And the fact that when people get mad, too, and they call me up and they say, I dislike that cartoon at all. Well, at least that's showing they're thinking about it. They get angry. Because the worst thing can happen is nothing. You know? At least Mormons are thinking. So when they throw stones at me, that's okay. At least, you know, at least they showed up. And that showed some, at least some passion. And that's what we got to do now. We've got to have a revival of passion in the church. We've got to be passionately involved in whatever we're doing. But at the same time, we have to be, you know, we got to respect other people. We got to be reasonable about it. But, so, yes, the answer to that is, yeah, it's very good. What we did is we did those three books, and it's a lot of work to crank one of those out, especially at the last minute, the way we always did it. And we had 3 months, and we did it in a month, and, you know, I put my family through a lot of, you know, I ignore them like a bishop, you know, to get that book in. And we get it in by Christmas. There's nothing about magic about Christmas. The magic of Christmas, you have to get the book in by Christmas, you know, because they have to sell, and it makes sense. But the thing is that I've done three books. I left, as long as I worked at Desert News, the last book I did, I had a little bit of a problem. Some people higher up, you know, they looked at some of the cartoons and they read more into them than I thought they should have, but the reaction was, the Saint Speak book with Orson Scott Card, is that what you're talking about? Okay, that was Scott's project. I just was just, you know, doing the artwork for him, and it was a lot of fun working with him. But am I going to do another book? I'll do another book if it's good. You know what I mean? Which everyone you have to do a sequel movie, it's got to be better than the other one, than the first one. There was no point doing it, you know. And the problem is when I went up to the Ogden paper, I'm starting doing cartoons there. So if I have a good idea, do I save it for the Ogden, you know, for the thing, or should I put it in the book? And so I'm in a situation now where I haven't decided what I'm going to do. If I'm going to do another book, it'll come out in another year or so. But we'll have to see. I don't know. I did have to move up there because I changed locations. And so right now I'm in the middle of trying to keep the family happy. We'll have to see. Well, the flack I must have been talking about was official flack. Okay, I wasn't talking about, like, membership flack. I haven't done any of that since I got one of the Ogden, and I got flack from members up there, but it's just official flack, and I don't even think it's widespread. You know, it doesn't take many many loose cogs to bring the machinery to a grinding halt. All you have to do, you know, there's the church now has got so many people in its bureaucracy, and there's just so many people, or, you know, we got all these cooks in the kitchen. It doesn't take much to get things spilled over. So if the word comes down, we don't like you doing that, you know, I mean, what am I supposed to do? I mean, can I go to one person? Yes.
Don't get in the way. Maybe you have to respect that. I mean, maybe it's one thing you have to have more.
I think I've been very clear. I don't know. See, the problem is I've never really sat down with him and talked to him about it. There's been no communication. In 12 years I worked with him. I guess I could use this as an excuse, the fact that I worked for him. I really shouldn't go over my boss's head, you know, and go around and try and do it. I guess maybe now I'm in a position where I could do that if the situation, you know, was, you know, presented itself. But I don't know at this point, you know, right now if I want to do that. But I really think if I went and talked to him, you know what I'd get? I'd get nothing but support, I bet you. Because I found out from experience that the big monster is in the middle somewhere. It's our fears. It's not reality. I mean, President Hinckley is just trying to do his job the best as he can do it. And he's trying to work with what he's got. And I'm sure when he goes to bed at night, he probably feels bad. He couldn't do better. But, you know, and that's exactly the way I feel about things. For us to go around, you know, feeling like alienated from each other and feeling down or any sort of animosity or hatred is really ridiculous. Because really, you know, it's only in our own mind, I think. But like I say, this is the system. And the system, you know, in the Bible, Paul talks about the church as a creature, you know, the body, one can't say the, you know, one hand can't say the other, I'm no need to do stuff. And the adversary is always like some animal, some creature. You know, I've been thinking a lot about that lately, and I'm thinking maybe that is a lot to that. But in the end, the monster, the creature, really is the organization. The organization that we need. You know, we need it because it keeps us together, but at the same time, it demands so much, and what it demands of us is a sacrifice, you know, sometimes, you know, a lot of sacrifice of our individual feelings and things like that. A lot of things that, you know, a lot of the good things, I think, in the church are done by individuals. Mormons helping Mormons. Mormons helping non-Mormons. And you see it every week in the church news. Wow, look at that, you know, that person down in Texas, they went together and they helped those people in the flesh. You know, those are Mormons doing good things, but somehow there's that creature again, and all the creature thinks about is its own power, its own, you know, where it is, you know, in relation to all the other organizations, you know, the Catholics are up there, and Jews over there, you know, it's a dangerous world, you know, and Mormonism has to survive. And so when you're general authority, you're up there, what do you say? Do you speak what you think in your mind, it's what you really think, or do you speak it from your position, you know, your stewardship, and you say, you know, what you feel you have to say and stuff. So, I mean, these are not really answers, but questions that I have. I wonder if it's more like that. Is it possibly a faith promoting rumors would be back in print? You'll have to ask Sunstone on that. I don't know. He printed a lot of them. And, yes, you back? I think I have. Yeah, the question was, you know, about this monster. Do I have any? Well, I like to think of myself as a dragon slayer, I suppose. But I think I have in my books. Like I showed several. If I pulled these books out, I showed you some cartoons showing the church bureaucracy where I have the first presidency speech going through. And I'm sorry, they'll have to rewrite it. It didn't pass church correlation. You know, you have the bureaucracy running the church. You've got a situation where, you know, I mean, they have to take the president of the church. I mean, I heard this happen. I actually did. They took President Kimball in this room and showed him all the things that the monster was sending all the bishops, and there was no time for their families. The monster was eating up all the time that people had on Sunday, and they couldn't send their families. And he said, my goodness, we got to stop this. So the church made this program of cutting down all the stuff it was dumping on all the bishops to do. It's just like the federal government. It's no different. It just keeps growing bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, and you create an agency and it just wants to survive and get its share of the red meat, the budget, you know. And I think the one thing you learn over all these years, what I have learned at least, is that how much it's like everything else. The church is like everything else. It's more to like everything else. It has its good points and its bad points, its strengths and its weaknesses. And it's whatever you want to make it. Just like you know what I mean? That's it. And so when I do a cartoon, I do it like, hey, you know, I see that, and I just draw it out, and, you know, that's my impression. But, you know, I mean, that doesn't mean that's the way it is, you know. And here's this cartoon, it's right in front of me all the time, you know. You know, I have this Pepsi machine, but I don't use Pepsi, I use Preppy because I don't want to be sued by Pepsi. Anyway, it says, genealogy in a can, the choice of a new generation. And so what we have now is we're moving into the brave new world. of computerized genealogy and computerized everything. You know, I had one cartoon showing people. I think the one I got in trouble with was showing the hereafter, and they've all got these plastic cards. The angel is saying, "For those of you who receive principalities and powers and dominions, please keep these plastic cards with you at all times. Do not lose your plastic cards. You will need these plastic cards. If it says on there that you will receive these things without these plastic cards." Anyway. You know, I don't have any more idea what the next life is than anybody else. It's just that Mormonism has that unique gift of making the hereafter sort of like now, you know. And we have our, you know, and it's fun to play with it. It's great. And I really have fun at what I do. It's better than working for a living, I'll tell you that. Any more questions? Pat Bagley. Oh, I like Pat's work a lot. He's really good. And one other thing I like about Pat's work is he has that quality that editorial cartoonist that should have. You know, he really knows how to go in there and dissect an issue and really put it right there. And I don't know if it's something you're born with or something you have personality or you gain it, but I think one of my favorite cartoonists is Pat Oliphant. And I talked to Pat one time, and here I was, a little Mormon cartoonist in Salt Lake, and he's sitting there on the couch, and I'm like, "Yeah, Mormon, yeah." And whenever they come to the door, I pretend I'm drunk, so you know. "Well, I just love your church, but I just sort of like have a party going." He didn't say anything negative or bad. He's great. I'm the cartoonist. I talked to him. And I talked to him on the phone. I'm the cartoonist held prison by the Mormons. Out west in some obscure little places. I love it. It's fun. I never have that feeling. It's always I run into other people that are like roadblocks. Like I'm all ready to go, and I run up against an editor, and they're just kind of stuck there with the transmission hanging out or something. Let's get on the road, you know. There's just too much out there. It's like saying, "Did you ever run out of things to learn?" You know, and that's very. I'm saying that's a good question. It's a valid question you ask. What I'm saying is that no, there's no way. I mean, people are so fascinating, and it's not. I was just saying is that. None of my cartoons I've ever done on the church are about doctrine. They're about people's interpretation of doctrine. It's how we look at it. You know, you take a scripture and you give it out and you're like, "What does that mean to you?" And you have all these crazy situations where like all these blind men trying to figure out, you know, what an elephant looks like. "Oh, it's like this, it's like that," you know. And that's what's funny about it, because what we see in the cartoons is not, you know, we don't see the doctrine, we see the, you know, the interpretation of it. Boy, it's funny. Mormonism is a fun religion because we have these strange things, the ways we look at things. And I think it's great. You know, it almost shocks a lot of the other ministers around the church, I mean, around the country, too. I love the way Mormonism shocks people. "You really believe that? No, you're not Christians. You're human. You're monsters from the alien world." And, you know, I said, "You bet we are." I mean, "Wow, we're coming to your town. We're going to shake you up." And if they say, "How could you believe that?" And you say, "Well, it's just a fantastic idea, isn't it? Wow, if it ain't true, it should be." You know? Shoddy journalism. Okay. Well, the problem is that I did them on company time with them, and to bring those cartoons out would be kind of like, to publish them would be kind of difficult. Like, I ran into some problems there because, you know, I did them on their time. They're sort of like half ownership of everything. And also, a lot of them, those ideas were editorial cartoons, and they last 3 days, and then they evaporated away. You know, you're not funny after a few days. You know, I have enough time. I am syndicated out of New York. I do have my cartoons go around the country to a few hundred papers, so it's not just in Ogden, around the country. In fact, most of the letters I get from people from out east rather than from Utah, except for now. I mean, that was one of the desert news. But I don't know. I think what a year from now, at the standard, I'm going to do something with the cartoons out up there. I'm going to do something. I have some projects I'm planning. Because you really need that cooperation to make those things go. When I was at the desert, I knew there was just too many reasons not to do things. So I thought, you know how it is, you know, here we are. And when you're on a team that's way behind, you just don't feel like you're doing anything, you know. Any You mean, what do you mean? You mean the church? You mean, the question was printing in the church news. The Desert News Church News?
Yes.
Well, I mentioned before earlier we tried that. And just, the church news got good graphics, and it tells you everything you always, every good thing you ever wanted to know about yourself. It's like trying to find out, you know, the truth about this automobile you're buying from Chrysler itself. And, you know, you go to a dealership and they'll say, tell me the truth about your product. Oh, I'm glad you asked me, because I'm just the person to tell you. And there's a lot of good things happening in a church, and that's what you find in the church news. It's not a lie. It's not a lie. It's the truth. But it's just like trying to go to Pravda and find out, you know, what's really happening in Russia. Well, everything in there is what's happening, but it's what they're leaving out. And that's what the purpose, I think, of the Sunstone magazine and other publications are, is to have that other side of the story. And it's not so much that the church, like Desert, the church news publishes all the good things and leaves the bad things, but it's so much more like the things that are more intricate and complex. The church news, Desert News, is very simple things, you know. And people like that and they enjoy it, and the circulation of the church news is really, you know, going up, and it'll continue to go up. People love it. Oh. Well, I worked for an editor and editors. There were several of them. You know, every time you have a committee do something, it always works out better. You know, so what happened was that the idea went around, you know, around the horn and back and through several people. I'm trying to make two people like the same thing. That's amazing. It's like having, you know, shoes fit to three that, you know, feet, you know, and two different people the same, wear the same shoe size. And so it was really maddening, but. What happened in the question about where it was going is that basically that I just couldn't make it work. So, any other questions?
What
was the church news? Different news can be sold. Does anybody here have it? Does anybody here have a $300 million on you and an aggressive California attitude and a hot tub? Okay. One more question. The question was a situation where demands were made where I couldn't do. All I know is that they didn't tell me I couldn't do another book. They objected to my association with Sunstone and certain cartoons I was doing, and I felt if I couldn't do the cartoons the way I wanted to do it, there was no point in doing the book, because then I was putting myself in position just the way I had at the Desert News. One of the reasons I did the books is because I felt, you know, if I'm restricted here, or I felt like, you know, I have to play with the team here, then I can go do my own thing out there. But it turned out that, you know, I mean, the stakes are just too high. You know, when you get up there and you have all that power and everything going, and you know, the height, you get, it's like being higher up, you start looking down, you know, seeing how high up you are, it starts getting kind of scary. And I guess that's the situation, is that who I was working with, you know, felt, oh, that's pretty scary, you know. And there I go, you know, walking along the edge, you know, tied to everyone else, you know, they felt. Anyway, you know, a cartoon, you know, you're like the person in the operating room with the chainsaw, and everyone else is working with scalpels, you know. Yeah, you know, they're working on this delicate little surgery, and you pull out this chainsaw. Where do I start? You know, cut off this, cut off that. You know, and that's what Pat and I do. There's no easy way to look at it. I mean, that's it. I mean, you know, when you start taking that chainsaw and start making little cuts on the mirror, you know, But I appreciate your questions, and I appreciate your response and showing up. And unless my mother didn't come, you know, she's still talking to me. But that basically, you know, it's been fun. It's a fun thing, and like I said before, you know, I mean, dare to be different and lengthen your stride. Well, I have. I've lengthened my stride, and I've walked on a few people, maybe, and but I've enjoyed it, and I appreciate you coming today. And if there's any, you want to come up and rap or something, or look at something here afterwards, I'd be happy to talk to you. Thank you.